Melbourne, Missouri.
Okay. Now, are your parents immigrants?
No.
Oh, okay.
I come from a long, long line of Americans.
Okay. So, what years did you live in Melbourne? You don't currently live there.
No, I don't live there now. I moved there in January of 1961, and I lived there until about February of 1966. I have been. I'm not very active right now, but I have been, yes.
Okay, and what kind of activities did that group do?
Well, the group started out as a way of helping immigrants from Mexico, and it was commissioned by the Mexican consulate.
Oh.
That's why it's called the Mexican Outreach Commission. And the consulate wanted to help patriots, expatriates from Mexico, to get along better and to, you know, as a way of giving them things they needed, like to learn English and to have friends, I guess, and associates they could call on. And one of the first things they did when they started was to develop an insurance program. There's a lot of brotherhoods, so-called, that start up that way. So I think that people paid like a nickel a week or something for insurance. And then if somebody was out of work because of sickness, they got a minimum payment through the insurance. And then I guess it provided burial expenses and things like that. That was one of the main reasons that the organization started. But it was
about
1926 or 7, I forget which year. But it was mainly a group of Mexican men who would get together and meet in the tavern or somewhere. They didn't have a hall back then.
So it was also kind of a social.
It was kind of a social organization, but there weren't a lot of women involved until the war years, I think. And then because so many men went away to the service, I think they got the women involved because I've seen some minutes where women were officers. But they still had their meetings at some place wherever they could, I guess. And I didn't get involved until they began to open up their meetings to the families, trying to get more people. Sometime in the 60s, they started doing that, and then they would have a dinner. They'd have a meeting on a Sunday afternoon, then they would have a dinner, and the family would come together as a group, and that kind of helped to bring in more members to the meetings. So that's when I got involved. And the other purpose of the organization was to try to keep their culture alive. And so they have a dance group, and they would have fiestas, still do, two times a year, would have fiestas. And there would be a performance by the dance, folkloric dance group, and then Mexican food and some Mexican drink. And usually a Mexican band would play for the dancing. They have other activities, which are mostly social, and sponsor sports teams and things like that.
Social now.
It is primarily social now. I don't think they haven't had the insurance since I can remember. I don't know when that went out the wayside.
Do you know if their activities changed at all during World War II?
Don't know very much about those years.
I think
they were having fiestas back then, and their social times, you know, they'd have dances and things, because I remember hearing my father-in-law talk about it.
Okay, so did your parents live in Memphis?
No.
Okay.
No, I grew up in St. Louis County.
Okay. So, when did you get married?
We were married in 1960.
And
no, we didn't move for a year. We lived over in St. Louis County for a year. And then we had a child, and so I quit work, and we needed a less expensive place to live, so we moved to Lincoln Place in the big home that his parents lived in, and they had fixed it into three apartments, so we had one of those.
Now, I know you didn't live there when the initial immigrants first came over, but during the year that you did live there, did you notice most of the other immigrants in the area were from Eastern Europe? Did you notice that the Mexican immigrants, I don't want to
No.
With the rest of the community?
No, I didn't notice that at all. When I moved there in 1961, it was still that kind of a community of immigrants. Mm-hmm. It hadn't really changed over much like it has today. But I guess I grew up with a lot of immigrants without really realizing who they were or where they were mm-hmm. from. But when I moved there, it was a very, very obvious change, you know, to me, that I was now living with a lot of foreign people,
sure.
foreign to me, uh-huh. you know. But they were all very, very friendly and welcomed me as part of the community, and I didn't notice any kind of friction between any of the groups. They would tease one another in a good-natured mm-hmm. way. Oh, you know, that's, they talk about Mexican time or, you know, things like that. They would tease each other, but they all had kind of a camaraderie that was unusual. Mm-hmm. And I remember once going to a picnic with, I guess it was the 4th of July, and everybody was going out to the park with picnic lunches and stuff, and my parents came, and I remember him helping one of my husband's friends carry the ice chest out to the park, and my dad was kind of amazed because, you know, he moved from his home where he grew up and to get work, and of course these people had too, but what was unusual is that my husband and his friends had known each other since they were children, and here they were, grown people with families. My dad said it's very unusual for people to remain this close over this many years
yeah.
and have known each other for so long. And I realized it was a very unusual place in that there was a cohesiveness there that you don't see in a lot of places. I grew up in a small suburb in St. Louis, a very small area where a lot of people knew each other. But I didn't notice that same kind of cohesiveness that there was in Lincoln Place. And lifelong friendships where people still associate with one another after all these years, even after they move out of Lincoln Place.
So I know that they had Sunday school at the community center. The community center was a very big part of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Did the Mexican immigrants also participate in the Sunday school at?
Yes, a lot of people did. It was a mission.
Mm-hmm.
I think the church that sponsored it saw that as a mission field. And I'm not sure that they converted very many people, but it was a place for children to, I'm not sure if they got fed there or what, but they learned things and it was a place for them to be safe and have some social time together. And one of the places was kind of like a daycare, I think.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm
sorry. I know when I used one of them. That was still there. It was a daycare center when my kids were little.
At the community center?
No, it was at the mission.
Oh, okay.
Down at the church. They have a mission.
Oh, okay.
Building a little farther down the street.
Okay.
But at one time they did have Sunday school in the community center.
Okay.
I'm not sure how many people went to that because the Armenians had their own church
mm-hmm.
right there, and the Bulgarians, I think, probably had
each group
a church.
Had,
yeah,
they had their own.
Close by. And in fact, all the Mexican people, you know, belonged to St. Joseph's, which was just downtown. So everybody had their own church. The Sunday school was kind of like a little separate thing.
So the Mexican immigrants went to the Catholic Church? Mm-hmm.
Most
the
of them.
Church,
most
Lincoln
of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about Mexican restaurants? Did anybody open up any restaurants?
There were a lot of restaurants there at one time. Most of them I don't know a lot about because I didn't live there then. There was only one restaurant left when I lived there, and that was the International Restaurant. And they had wonderful papakash, which I used to buy.
And
they called it papakash. It was kind of a stew with hot peppers in it. And I used to buy that to take home. Because it was so hot, I would add tomatoes and a can of potatoes and stretch it a little and kind of tone down the spiciness of it. But when, before Highway 3 was built through, there was only Needring House
mm-hmm.
to get to the Army Depot. And so Needring House was a very, very busy street. and they had a large contingent of military people there during World War II. It was a big, like a supply base. And the only way to get in and out of there was down Niedrig House. So they had tavern after tavern lining that street, and a lot of different ethnic grocery stores, mm-hmm. and restaurants, and a bakery, and cleaners, all kinds of things that were there that catered to the military as well as the people who lived there, and then the ones who worked at American Steel. So since that was the only street into the Army Depot at the time, it was very busy. Later, when Highway 3 opened up, a lot of that traffic that went through there disappeared.
So a lot of people who worked at the depot would come in.
Mm-hmm. The military as well as the civilian civil service workers. It was a big place at one time, the Army Depot.
So people would come from outside, from the community outside, come into
mm-hmm.
the
to work there, and then the military people who were stationed there. I don't know how many there were, but there were probably several hundred, or maybe mm-hmm. even thousands. I don't know, because it was largely diminished by the time I lived there. There were still a lot of people who worked there, civilian employees in 1961, but there weren't as many military people stationed
there. Now, the depot was built there during the war. Right?
I'm not sure when it was built. It was built probably for World War II, because the canal was, it was about probably about the same time that canal was built through. Mm-hmm. The canal wasn't always there. It was built sometime in the 40s, I believe.
By the time you got there in the 60s, did you see the neighborhood start to change as the first generation of immigrants got older and the second generation became adults?
It was beginning probably by 1961 to change, because when I moved there, my in-laws, my father-in-law and mother-in-law, my father-in-law, was still employed. He was still in his career. And his peers were, most of them, still working. And so they were like the second generation, I think, of immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I'm not real clear about that. But the people who were their children, like my husband and his siblings and his peers, one of the first things they did was to move out of there. And of course the parents' generation had goals and ambitions for their children.
Mm-hmm.
And as you probably heard, a lot of foreign people really dig in when they come to the United States. They take advantage of every opportunity that's offered to them, and they work really hard, and they kind of make the rest of us look bad because they're so industrious. And if you look at the people who grew up here, you will see, for example, the chief judge of Madison County Circuit Court is Andy Matossian. He grew up there.
Oh, okay.
And many of the political people in power, not very long ago, Nelson Hagner lived nearby in West Granite.
Mm-hmm.
And just a lot of people who rose to positions of power, authority, whatever you want to call it, came out of Lincoln Place. And part of it was because their parents saw that they got a good education.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted them to succeed and to do better than they had done. And a lot of people really did.
Mm-hmm.
But then they moved out of Lincoln Place.
So now, even though you don't live there anymore, do you still have ties to the Lincoln Place? Well, not if you work with the Mexican Commission.
I still have a few ties down there. I have a few friends who still live down there. And then the hall, the Mexican Honorary Commission Hall, is there. And still have a few of my husband's relatives who live there. Most of the people that I knew really well don't live there anymore, but there's a little tavern down there where they serve tacos on Saturday night, which is kind of a fun place to go if you like that kind of taco. And it's kind of like a gathering place for the people who grew up there. If they want to be sure to see some of their friends, if they go there on a Saturday night, it's likely they're going to.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Mexican Honorary Commission has a tavern. A lot of the social life.
Oh, they have a tavern in Lincoln Place?
In the hall in Lincoln Place.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so they talk about going to the club or going to Ernie's. So those two places are still very active and very much patronized by not only the people who used to live there, but probably people who live there now, and a lot of people who work in that area, mm-hmm. like at American Steel.
So now all the different ethnic groups go to all the different places, not the Mexicans don't just
I think they always did. There's another tavern called Sammy's, which is owned by an Armenian family, the Negotians. And there used to be some other little shops there. There's very few that left anymore. Very few of the children grew up to want to run the shops that their families owned. And so when those people died off, their businesses mm-hmm. closed. And some people have made an effort, like there was a place down there called Planet Granite, mm-hmm. which was, I believe, a hairstyling shop and I think a tavern, I mean, like a bar on the other side. I never was in either side, so I can't tell you much more than that about it. But he really put a lot of money into fixing up that building and trying to make something out of it. And for some reason, it just didn't go over. We only had it a few years, and now it's closed, too. So there are not too many businesses left along that stretch of Metering House anymore. But the people, I think, never had any problem getting along together, as far as I remember. If there were any kind of hard feelings or fights among the different nationality groups, it happened way before I was there.
Some of the interviews that people have done in our classes have noticed that actually the immigrants as a whole kind of had some conflict with the outsiders.
That's probably
like
true.
The people from, you know, I think there were some people from Tennessee in that area who...
That's what they call West Granite. The West Granite people, a lot of people from Tennessee, I don't know, Kentucky, wherever. Mm. You know, people go to where their kind is, people that they relate to or their relatives. And so there used to be a little bit of animosity between Lincoln Place and West Granite. Some of it was good-natured, some of it was probably deep-seated.
Yeah.
And a lot of it probably had to do with the fact that the people who lived in Lincoln Place were immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, the people from the South are not very tolerant of others. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's what happened, but I remember hearing it would have been more ethnic because there's not a lot of racial differentiation there. But not maybe the people from the South don't perceive it that way. They may perceive it as racial differences. I don't know. But there's no racial difference.
Oh no. So well, yeah, some interviewees refer to them as hillbillies too. So
or rednecks or Hoosiers. And they called me a Hoosier, but in a good natured way. I think my husband's friends would call me that, and I would say I'm not a Hoosier. You know, you can call me a hillbilly if you like, because my family came from the hills in Northwest Arkansas, and I would accept that. But I'm not a Hoosier. And they would say, yes, you are. You're not a honky or an Armenian or a Mexican. What are you? You're a Hoosier. But in a way, that was kind of good-natured when they teased me, or at least I felt it
so
was.
So as a non-immigrant, you never felt
I never like felt an like an outsider there. Never. It was a very accepting community, I felt, when I moved there. And one of the first things that I did after I moved there, because, you know, I was a stranger except for my husband's family. My husband asked my sister-in-law if she would take me to the Lincoln Place Mother's Club. And so they met in the afternoon, I think, one day a month or a week. I don't remember how often they met. But she took me there, and it should have been called the Grandmother's Club, I think, at the time, because most of the women were the older generation. But there were several younger ones, you know, my sister-in-law's age and my age. And that was another way for me to get acquainted with mm-hmm. a lot of these people. They were all different nationality groups. I remember one lady was Hungarian, several were Macedonian, some few were Mexican, not too many. But they were all different groups, and they all got along well, and they had their little meeting, they had some refreshments afterwards, and they raised a lot of money. And
they were a charitable group,
and they, I don't know what all they did with their money. It didn't belong to the organization long enough to really know what they did. But I know they helped people who were needy, if they could, and they gave some money to sports teams and things like that, and maybe to the clubhouse. If they needed something, they would, like, would buy it. But they were able to raise a lot of money. I don't know what what you would consider a lot. I mean, they could give $50 here and $25 there, mm-hmm. and things like that. And they would have raffles and make quotes and sell baked goods and things like that to raise money.
How about,
yes, they did, and as a matter of fact, some of the my husband's age group told me that they felt like all their friends' mothers were like their mother, and they were welcome in each other's homes, and they would eat the different ethnic foods, and they, most all of them are familiar with the different kinds of foods. And when I moved there, I would have things like felnik and sarma, it's called. Is sarma is like grape leaves stuffed with rice and some kind of meat. And selnik is kind of like a pastry with, made with cheese. It's not sweet. One of them's Hungarian, for sure. Maybe both of them are Hungarian. I'm not sure. But I learned how to eat that, and then I would go to the market that was owned by Macedonians and buy shish kebab, mm-hmm. ready to cook. They'd have it all seasoned and cold, skewered. I could get those for like 50 cents a piece. And then I would get the paprikash at the international restaurant, and I would get the tacos down at the Ernie's Tavern. And my husband's cousin lived right across the street from me, and she'd show me how to make tortillas. And I would show her how to make some things that I knew how to make, that, you know, she didn't know how to cook American food. So we would switch back and forth, and in the process she sort of learned English, and I learned a little Spanish from her. And but people did that. It was really a very nice, tightly knit community.
So the younger generation also continued to cook traditional food, I would say?
I'd say a lot of them did. Well, you know, I'm talking about my age group. We're not really the younger generation anymore, but yeah, I think they did. And the other things I had were from people in my age group. I didn't have very many things from people in the older generation, except my mother-in-law.
I know there were taverns and things for adult entertainment. As far as the kids were concerned, what kind of games or entertainment?
Well, they had the clubhouse, the one thing. They played a lot of basketball there. They had...
so that would be a place maybe where they would spend a week night,
They'd go down there and they could play in the gym, or they would have organized activities for them. I don't know what kind. I'm sure they probably had the equivalent of Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts and Girl Scouts or something like
so
that.
So who coordinated all of these activities?
Who did? Yeah. The clubhouse is owned by the city. It's part of the Granite City Park District.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if it's always been owned by the city, but I know it is now. The mission down the street was a mission of the Baptist Church. The Armenians had their own building where their children went to Armenian lessons. And I think they had a Sunday school too. So they would go to their Sunday school. They would also go to classes to study Armenian, because they don't want their children to forget to speak Armenian. Mm-hmm. And there's service at their church, their new church that they have out on Pontoon Road is mostly in Armenian. So they've done very well in keeping their culture alive. The there was always softball. They had a couple of softball diamonds. Maybe they were like sandlot softball diamonds.
Uh-huh.
But there was always like a pickup softball game. They liked to play that. And then, of course, my husband introduced soccer, and so they would play soccer down on the clubhouse grounds, which wasn't very big, not full size for a soccer field, but he would teach a lot of the kids how to play soccer. And I'm not sure, they might have had some activities on the depot for them, not sure. And the people who lived there whose parents were military had access to the depot and their programs there. And they had a swimming pool and a golf course. And so if your parent was military, and I know some of the people, Mexican people, whose families were military, they could go down to the depot for swimming.
So there were several military families?
There were a few. And, well, I'm sure back before I moved there, there were a lot more. Mm-hmm. But when I lived there, there were only a few. And they also had a movie theater on the depot. So there were a lot of things for them to do. Plus, they weren't too much in the city, I think. Some of those kids, including some of my own children, probably used to go swimming in the canal. So, you know, they did things like that were not really acceptable for parents, but kids find things to do.
Could anyone go to the movie theater?
No, the depot was more for military people. You had to have permission to go in the depot for other things. In later years, they had softball diamonds there and soccer fields, and they would allow outsiders to come in, you know, and have leagues and so forth. But when I first lived there, it was still pretty tight. There were a lot of civil service people that worked there, and a lot of, there was a commissary also in the depot, and a PX. Mm-hmm. So that was the only one in the whole St. Louis area outside of Scott Air Base.
Wow.
So you had people coming from all over the city in St. Louis. If they wanted to shop at a PX or a commissary, they had to come there.
Yeah.
This was a really strange community in a lot of ways.
As far as the taverns are concerned, did the women go to those also?
I don't think they used to. I think they used to more or less be the province of the men. But, you know, the younger generation became a little more demanding, a little more liberated, whatever. And now I would say there's not a whole lot of difference. There's probably still more men in the taverns. But then? When I first moved there, I don't think too many women went to the taverns in 1961. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, at home with small children, as most of the people I knew were. So we didn't have a lot of opportunity to do things, to go anywhere, you know, stay home with the kids.
Right. So most of the women did not work outside of their homes?
Let's see. I wouldn't say most of them. I would say it was probably the other way around, that most of them did, especially when they first came here, because they needed the money in order to survive. I think my own mother-in-law worked in a factory in St. Louis making curtains, and I know my husband's cousin did that, and one of his cousins worked at Miss Hulling's for years. Oh yeah, there used to be good transportation to go to St. Louis. There was a streetcar that came right down almost all the way to Lincoln Place. They could catch the streetcar by the UNESCO plant and go all the way over to St. Louis. But I would say that there were a lot more women who worked in my mother-in-law's generation, and then probably even my generation, just while they were raising small children, there weren't a lot of daycare places when they were little, and so very few of them worked outside the home. Then they stayed home with their kids. But you know, if you only have a couple of kids, it didn't take long before they were in school and you could go back to work.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them worked.
So the original women that women worked, where did they?
They had to work where English was not necessary.
Okay.
So they worked in a factory making clothing or curtains or whatever. They could, you know, it was like the equivalent of men working in a steel mill. They used their skills of labor to make a living. And my husband, his first job was at Miss Hulling's, I believe, as a busboy or a dishwasher, I'm not sure. Never advanced much farther than that. But I always tease him because he worked with Ramon Gallardo, who owns the Casa Gallardo.
Oh, really?
I said, gee, look how it worked out for him.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he started in the telling.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, there were a lot of opportunities for them, but they had to work somewhere where English was not the factor, because they didn't speak English well enough. The first generation people did.
And what did they do with their children?
They probably stayed home with them until they were big enough to go to school, or they had extended families. That there'd be one generation that would be watching the kids while the middle generation would be working, probably. I learned some strange things when I first went there. I thought it was interesting. One year I participated in a census for my church. Mm-hmm. And so I went around and knocked on a lot of doors that I wouldn't handle ordinarily. And a lot of people kept their upstairs for a show. Mm-hmm. And they lived in the basement of their houses. They had their kitchen down there, and they had bedrooms down there. And probably the only thing they went upstairs for was the bathroom. I thought that was strange because, you know, yeah. I never did do that. Our basement was
strange.
Was the pits. You yeah. know, we had a coal bin down there. But there was a lot of formality in their upstairs, you know, upstairs for show area of their homes. And they had really beautiful, clean, nice uh-huh. basements. As good as anybody else's upstairs, I guess. Yeah. It was interesting.
Some of the other people have talked about that they had real pride in their yards.
Oh, yeah. And nice gardens, and a lot of gardens. They grew vegetables and things, and they had the European style where they had raised beds so that you could walk in between the raised beds. And I'd say they were maybe 2 feet high, the raised beds where they had their gardens. It's interesting.
One of the women that we're going to be talking about a community garden, but I'm not sure when that was.
That must have been during the war.
Okay.
I don't remember that. There were victory gardens during World War II. That people were encouraged to grow their own mm-hmm. food, you know, to help the war effort.
Right. The Mexican immigrants have a group now. About how many have, maybe about how many?
How many? There were probably between, a dozen and two dozen, maybe, or more when I first moved there.
But compared to the other groups, maybe they were a little smaller? Kind of
it could be. I never really noticed. There's only 16 blocks mm-hmm. in Lincoln Place, so, you know, not a lot of homes there. Mm-hmm. And I never really noticed. I would probably guess they were probably a smaller group because the Hungarians owned the hall that the Mexicans now have. They had their own hall. The Armenians had their own hall. And they were probably larger groups.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that for sure. I never did really get a count.
Would you say that, obviously in your case, but marriage within a particular ethnic group was important to people? Or
some of the people, still had arranged marriages, especially the Armenians in my age group. Yes,
wow.
Yes, I know a couple of people whose marriages were arranged, and you know maybe they didn't even know their prospective spouse, but their families arranged it because it was very important to them to marry within their group, and they did that, but. There were a lot of intermarriages among the different groups. Like my husband's sister married a man whose family was Bulgarian.
Mm-hmm.
My husband's brother married a woman whose family was Italian, but she was from St. Louis, so that was different. quite a few. I would say it was more common than not to have intermarriage. The ones who really stayed within their own group were probably the ones who had the arranged marriages. But yeah, that was kind of strange to me.
Yeah.
because I thought that went out in the last century or something.
So these were arranged marriages with other people who lived in Lincoln Place?
No, one that I know of, they're still married today. She was from Canada. And he grew up here. And so, you know, it was a family thing that they would, you know, matchmake or whatever. It wasn't necessarily the girl next door.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess finally, one of the last things that a lot of people have talked about in their interviews is that as time has gone on, and recently there's been a sense of a loss of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Would you
mm-hmm.
say that that's true?
I think that's probably true in that so many of the homes that were owned by the homeowners in the past are now in the hands of landlords
mm-hmm.
and their there's a lot of rental property and a lot of transients, people who don't stay there very long, you know. Mm-hmm. And myself, I was kind of in that category in a way, because I only lived there 5 years. And so all the things that I'm telling you, you know, to be very clear, it's from an outsider's point of view.
Right.
Because I didn't grow up there, and it's only things I observed while I lived there. But I am a journalist, so my senses of observation are pretty good. But there were a lot of things that, for example, people felt very safe in that community.
Mm-hmm.
I never had to worry about locking my car doors. I always felt that there would be somebody there to protect me if I needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's that way today. Mm-hmm. I think people have to worry more about crime and about safety. And a lot of that has to do with it being opened up, you know.
Right.
You can now drive straight through from downtown, what used to be downtown Granite, to Highway 3. And
mm-hmm.
people can come down that highway from anywhere. So before, there was only that one street to get into Lincoln Place. There was another way from West Granite, but it wasn't as well known. So it was kind of like a real sheltered area. And that's changed now because of the highway and the fact that people have died and their heirs sold their property and there are a lot of rental property down there, I'm sure. It's probably true because, as I told you, you know, that was their push, was to get their kids out of there, because in a way it was like a ghetto.
Yeah.
You know, when the immigrants come to an area, they're not welcomed everywhere,
mm-hmm.
so they tend to cling together, and it becomes like a ghetto or a barrio or the wrong side of the tracks or whatever. And so your ambition is to get your kids out of there. I wanted to get out of there because, for one reason, when I lived there, because the pollution was so bad. That's changed a lot now. There was a lot of those
mm-hmm.
things that were polluting the area are no longer there, like Union Starch. That was a terrible pollutant
mm-hmm.
and smell. Sometimes the smell was overpowering. And there were a lot more steel mills
right.
when I lived there. Now there's only American Steel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't like living there because of that. That was a big problem to me. But as far as the community, I loved that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was wonderful. I just marveled at it when I moved there, because I had lived in California and I had lived growing up in St. Louis County and I had family that lived in other parts of the country. To me, that was just a very precious, unusual community.
Unusual.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sad to see it
yeah.
kind of disappear.
Yeah, it's very interesting that it belongs so well.
It was. And they, I think they absorbed some of each other's culture
mm-hmm.
at the same time. And you can see that when you go through the different festivities that they have. There's still that intermingling of people coming to enjoy the other
mm-hmm.
people's culture. They still do.
Okay. I think that's all I have. Thank you.